agents, and really, there are too many agents, is one of the ideas. They're there for the wrong reasons. I think it even came down to the discussion was, in the beginning, when the commercial card, when the blue card started, really agents were just on the commissioner's approval to help out if someone got sick or someone got ill or someone went to military service. And then over the years, it kept on getting a little bit looser and looser until about 2008. In 2008, that's when we had changes specifically for the crab fishery agent, where you could have an agent. And then we ran into a situation where there was what we called license stacking, where one person would have two or three family members' cards and be serving as an agent for them. So the commission came back and said, if you have a crab license of any type, you can't be an agent. But now you could still have situations where one person is an agent for your crab pots and turns around and can fish your feeler pots if you're doing both. And certainly there are more than a few who have both gears. So it's hard to say today that we want to make a big push on agents unless we get more people here, I think. What I'm thinking about agents are is the committee should come up with a stance on what they feel should be done for agents. Right now, I think we can have up to 168 agents total. What I noticed last year was that, if you don't remember the history, the commission in 2013 said anyone who was a licensee in 2012 could have an agent. And also, if they traded their license, if they sold their license, then whoever got that license from the 2012 person could also have an agent. And I think the cap was made then that there could be additional agents if the commissioner found compelling reason. But we're somewhere up in the 150s, 160s. I don't think we used them all. I think that there were 140 some agents, but what surprised me was in 2014, there were 50 some or 51, we have the numbers, agents who weren't in 2013 fishery. So the question is, we went out of the way to help those from 2012, and then they turned around, at least 50 of them by 2014 didn't use an agent, and they used one in 2013. To me, that was really surprising. So there's work to be done. The one concern I have is whatever the committee wants to do on agents, we should get the word out and have a meeting so those who have an agent, who use an agent and can't live without having an agent, that they're at least informed that the committee is talking about it. Because otherwise, what you're going to have, what you're going to face is the commission will meet, there'll be a public hearing, those who don't like what's going on will show up, and it'll derail any kind of change. I mean, that's a given. That's the way it usually happens. If the commission's faced with dissent and it's pretty strong about making any changes, it's going to be tough for them to make any changes. So I don't mean to lessen your initiative to come up with a better system. And if you want to talk about agents today some more, that's fine. We have some materials. Joe Cimino has some materials he can share with you if you want to just see what we have. If you want to stick on the agent issue, we also left the sanctuary issue from two meetings ago, really, where there were quite a few requests on how the sanctuary might be changed. And Ron Lipschitz had talked about, well, we'll need to see exactly where you want to change it. It'll take some time to figure out what the compensation is, what the loss in spawning potential might be. I had asked Ron, we'll also look at that, not only shaving off areas, which I think you talked about more than anything else, or modifying the southern boundary, which you brought up,
yeah,
but also the time periods. You know, if you have a week more to craft before the sanctuary closes, then what's involved there? You know, what's missing there? Behind all this, I can tell you that the commission, like all of us, is going to be looking at May and looking at the winter dredge results when they're final. And that's there. And then, you know, crabs are very important to the commission, more so than ever, because they've changed the management framework. So they're managing now from July to July. And it'll probably bay-wide go from August 1 to July 31st will be coming up. So that's going to change the thinking all the way around, because you get one set of dredge survey results in May, and that had the commission making management measures all the way around right to July of 2015, but in May of this year you'll get some more dredge information, and the commission may or may not want to look at that in terms of the spawning age females. So I think it's an improvement all the way. I'm not sure why this wasn't done years ago. I think management, from whenever I can remember, has always been based on whatever the results are from the winter dredge survey, and it's too late to do anything about March and April, usually by that time period, and maybe even May. So now the commission has the ability to change that a little bit. And I think the big push was we didn't pay attention to the juveniles out of the winter dredge survey. We were usually managing at the larger size crabs, the ones we knew would spawn in May or in the summertime, and paying attention to them. The juveniles, they didn't get the attention that they're going to get now for what happens when they recruit to the fishery. So your choice, what you want to do today. We can talk some more about agents, and my staff will make a presentation to you if you want to do that. We'll probably have to reiterate it next time, but that's okay. You may have some ideas that we can show new next time. Chris, how are you?
Good.
You can talk about the sanctuary. You want to talk about that? Go back to that. It's your choice.
Yeah, what information Rob come up with on that. That was one of the big topics last week.
On the sanctuary?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'll tell you something else I think we need to do, too, based on what I see here. There's a lot of people missing from different geographical locations. That's important. I think from now on, maybe we need to make phone calls. How many people are going to show up? It's hard to speak for the entire state of Virginia when you only got 5 or 6 people. What's good for one area is not good for another. You know what I'm saying? So I think it'd be a good idea to call.
Are you going to make the calls?
No, I think I'll call you.
Okay.
Call you to give you a
little joke back there. Yeah, sorry.
Do it at a certain time so you have a general idea how many people don't show up.
I think if we set the meeting, what we can do, Marshall, is we're sending an email, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You're getting an email. I think all we have to say is, will you attend? How would that do?
That'd work.
That'd work, right?
Yeah.
Because we start calling.
Yeah, do that. One other thing is maybe if we could have a tentative date when we're here. I know it's tough probably for your schedules, but it would be, you know, we meet every basically 30 days. I think it would be helpful if we could walk out of here and say, hey, we're going to meet again the 18th, and that way we've already got it on our calendar when we leave this meeting.
What I'd rather do is after we leave here, then I can look at what we're doing, and we can send you at least 2 dates.
Yeah.
And say, which ones are you available? And then we can go with the majority of when you can meet.
That's, I think, just the sooner we set it,
yeah,
the better in terms of getting everyone, especially, I mean, the guys are going to be, you guys are going to be on the water here before long.
Yeah. Well, we can do that. Yeah. Well, you know, someone asked me today, which was Tom Powers. He can't be here because he's working, but he said, are you always going to have these afternoon meetings? I said, no. When the crab season starts, the afternoon meetings are gone. But we'll do that. We can do that pretty easily on both counts, both on Marshall's request and on your request. And it sounds like Marshall wants to talk about sanctuaries.
No, I do have a couple of questions.
Okay.
I'd like to bring up about the agents when we get a chance.
Okay.
Yeah. We'll talk about that too.
Yeah.
We can do that first.
All right, we'll do agents first. Yeah. All right. Joe, you have a little presentation. So the benefit here might be, if you have other ideas, by the time the rest of the geographical areas are here, you know, maybe we can introduce those as well.
Yeah. Before you do the presentation, I mean, wouldn't it be better to get his questions? I mean, rather than us trying to get through all the staff.
My first question, maybe it doesn't pertain really.
Yeah, that's fine.
But why did we eliminate agents in the oyster fishery?
Never eliminated them. They never started. It was originally based on the idea if you had a personal license that you couldn't have an agent. And that's existed since 1994.
And that only is in the oyster industry?
Well, it's also in striped bass. You know, you alone have to have be on board the vessel with your permit when you have striped bass. It also applies to the conch fishery. So what was done on the oyster fishery, if you remember, what happened was originally there was some confusion about who could get a bushel limit, and it started out with you had to have a license, meaning a gear license, and then it was realized, well, you're not going to have three gear licenses on the board, so then it was just the commercial registration license. That's about 5 years ago. That's as close as it got to, you know, being fair, like the other fisheries.
How low is our crab number in the bay in 2014? A little more? That's like a historical low?
It's going to be higher than 2013. We're expecting that. You know, it's already getting close to 2013, and we've got other data coming in. So it's not going to be as low as 2013, which, you know, still, day-wide, it's still going to be pretty low.
One of my thoughts was that, like in some of the other fisheries that we have, when you get to a certain number, you know, you can start adding to it or put people back into the fishery that are waiting or something, and maybe we should consider doing the same thing with agents.
That's a unique idea. I like that. And we were pretty low last year at 68.5 million age one plus female crabs anyway. So, yeah.
That's just a thought.
That's a good thought. But I think the big issue is what about the current system? Because the current system lets in, is it 168 total?
There's 168.
There's a potential for 168 agents coming in. And what, as I said, what really surprised me is about 50 of them were new agents last year. They were from licensees who hadn't had an agent in 2013. So what do you think of that system? And then you realize what we talked about today earlier is the agents are, maybe we had 145 that actually were in the fishery. We have over 400 crab fodders that aren't doing anything as far as according to our reports. They don't do anything. But of that 400, you have to expect some could do something. And what we wondered today was, if you tighten down, I'm not speaking pro or con, but if you tighten down on the agents enough, do you draw in some of those other crabbers who haven't been crabbing, late in effort, and do they work out some arrangement, almost like an agent system, where someone sort of helps them along to get them out there?
Yeah,
I mean, I don't know. But we've had a lot of problems, as I mentioned, with effort control. You've got these 230 people or so on this waiting list. They've been there forever, since 2008. You've got 400 or so crab potters and plenty of peeler potters who haven't been doing anything. And then you have the agents. It's all tied together in effort control. And then the issue you talked about effort control out of the gate, was to talk about the buoy tagging, you know, to get a system where you could have buoy tagging. You were talking about what's in the fishery and trying to make sure that the pot limits aren't abused everywhere. And what else we should talk about is what's not in the fishery. And when should it be in the fishery? It's very similar to what you just said about the agents.
Well, that's something that could be maybe with the ones that aren't participating. Could you do something, or couldn't we discuss something about that also applying to the number of crabs that we had?
Yeah. That might be kind of good, because I think the commission has been wary of removing people from fisheries. We see it time and time again, although it's been done. You know, we've done it with dogfish, where if they hadn't harvested in a couple of years, then they weren't permitted anymore. With crabs, it might be a little tougher, but that might be some way to say, okay, it's not that we're going to remove you, it's just that if the conditions aren't right, you're still not coming in because you haven't been, you know, crabbing for the last 3 years, the last 4 years, whatever you want to look at. I mean, we'd be happy to look at that. It takes a little work, but that's how we did the waiting list. The waiting list, if you remember, those of you who were around for that, had all sorts of ways of looking at it. The cleanest seemed to be if you hadn't harvested or reported harvest of a single pound of crab from 2004 to 2007. You were put on a waiting list. But we looked at all sorts of other things. We looked at if you hadn't harvested 1,000 pounds over that time period. If you had, you know, if you went on and on. I mean, there were many, many different ways of looking at that. But I think that's a pretty good idea, both for the agent and for the latent effort that exists now. And I'd like to hear from others on that, because that is a pretty good idea. You don't take, a lot of people say you're taking away what I might be able to give to my kids, to my grandkids, whoever, that they have the license because they're not fishing right now, but they want to be able to, you know, have.
Just like Jimmy Dean said, he had the license because you don't never know when you got to use it.
Right. And I've been asked that question point blank by people.
I need the oysters for the dive.
Do I need to use my license?
I can see his point there.
Yeah.
I kind of think, what about the people who have been in it since 1993, bought a license when you come up with a commercial registration license? And you've got these people that are kicked out of fisheries, like crab fisheries, that have bought a license in 93, and at that time they thought, you know, I'm going to go buy a license, and we don't have for the rest of life to be able to use it. But, I mean, they were in it at the beginning of that. And you come up with, you know, they no longer can use it. And I know there's people that have crab pot licenses that have been buying them way before any laws were ever made about it. And just doesn't seem fair for those people to be not allowed into that fishery. I mean, what about those people?
I'm not sure what you're asking. Do they still have a license and they've had it?
Well, just people, because 1993.
They still have a license.
Well, that's when you come up with a commercial registration license, right?
Yeah.
Correct?
Yeah.
So, I mean, it just doesn't seem right for those people not to be able to participate in history. You know, because at that time, 23 years ago,
well, if they haven't participated in 5 years or 4 years or 3 years, entities.
People and,
and no one takes a license from them, but just says, you know, crabs are having a tough time right now. Let's wait until the abundance level gets somewhere between the target, which is 215 million female crabs, and the unsafe part, which is 70 million. If we get halfway there, I'm just saying this arbitrarily, if we're halfway there, then maybe that's the time to be in there. I mean, I think we have to find out that information first. I mean, first we have to find out who has and has not done what. In other words, you have to put everything in groups. You have to figure out, when we looked at the 2004 to 2007 for the waiting list, we found out some of those harvesters had harvested in 2003 and 2002. Some hadn't harvested all the way back to 1998. So I think first we have to sort the data and see what's there and present the data, and then bring in the special situations. So I mean, I think that's the way we do it. But
yeah,
let's hear some thoughts. I'm going to be the referee today more than anything else. But
just one, you know, we've been talking about agents for the entire time. One thing we've always talked about in terms of numbers of agents, it might be helpful if we got, can you all determine landings by agent?
No, because the licensee report.
Because the licensee report, so we don't have any information about
we
that.
We can say, we can give you an upper estimate. In other words, any licensee who has an agent, we can assume that all the harvest came from the agent. But in some cases, that's not exactly right. I mean, you have a situation where a licensee and his agent both harvested the same year, but we'd give you the upper bound.
Yeah, which is what I did. I have a slide just saying
okay.
when they ask for an agent, that you know what the harvest was.
Okay.
Yeah. And it goes down to, I mean, to the date, since they record daily activity.
Mm-hmm.
If somebody was able to crab for themselves in March and April and then ask for an agent, you know, we can show when the agent would start.
Okay.
If you're a license holder in Virginia, you don't have to purchase your license, right? I mean,
right.
If I'm not going to grab this year, I don't buy my license, I can come back next year and buy my license.
That's right. And quite a few people buy a license and don't ever sell a credit card.
Have to have your commercial card.
I mean, they're doing that because they don't never know when they're going to stop it.
Right.
Yeah. And they're doing it in case whatever they're doing might go black.
Yeah.
But then you say you had to have everything to make it on the water.
Mm-hmm.
But it, I know in the Potomac River, you have to declare by the end of January if you're going to crab, and you always have to buy your crab by license whether you can use it or not. And that's the only way you can keep it. You miss 1 year not buying it, you know, you're subject to losing license forever.
Yeah. I think what happened in 1999 when there was a moratorium on additional crab pot licenses. Just a couple of years from then, it was decided that since no one else can get in to the crab fishery except through a transfer, that there was not a good reason to make them buy a license. However, exactly what you said a minute ago happened because we had the waiting list that came out of that. And, you know, is that fair? I mean, that's probably something to think about, because if you went the way of having to buy the license, I'm sure some of those people would have set a crab pot and crabbed some. So it's...
You don't have to set a crab pot, you just have to buy a license.
Yeah.
I don't have a problem with what you said about if you're licensed, a crab by license. I don't have a problem with that. These 400 individuals that's been holding these licenses for a long, long time, how long is that for?
We don't know yet. We can find out.
How far back?
Yeah, in other words, it seems to me that since 2003, okay, started there being a lot of licenses that weren't used. Starting in 2003. Some of them are on the waiting list now, and others could be different harvesters. But I think the numbers have been, even since 2003, I seem to remember that there was quite a bit.
This goes back to 2005. You see the big drop in eligibility after 2008, and that's that's the waiting list and the buyback. So that the bars are the percentage that are actually crabbing the Ken. So you can see that's it. In 05, 6, 7, 8, about 50% of those that could crab were actually reporting harvest. That went up when a lot of those people disappeared. So now, about, this is crab pot. So, you know, you got about, we're looking at over 60 to 70% of them are active. You see that the blue line, the top line, is who can still get the license. And the next line is how many of them actually bother to buy it. And then the green line is how many are actually harvested. So about 800 out of the 1,200. So there's a four. And it's been consistent since 2009. You know, the fisheries changed since a lot of us.
Something might be off there, though. That if there's 1,200 plus, I forget the exact number, that are eligible, then you're... percentages on the right seem to be off on the active. It almost looks like the active isn't quite 40%. So what is the percentages related to? They're off. Right? You got 800 out of 1,200, so you know that's definitely... We'll come back and take care of that. That should be higher. The percentage should be higher. But the point is, we still have 400 plus.
That's good.
Yeah.
It's 50. The active, you're looking like an 07? Is that right?
Yeah. I'm just looking at, there's 800, a little over 800, maybe 830 or 40 active licensees.
Yeah.
Out of 1,800.
And there's, well, but it's not... It's no longer out of 1,800. It's out of 1,200. So maybe the 40% is all the way back to 1,800. Is that what you're thinking?
Yeah, the 40's back to there, and then...
We'll have to doctor that.
It's that light blue is the percent, right, Jeff?
Right. The percent of the eligible that are reporting. And so some of this, you know, some of these folks do work together. We even look, you know, we made sure that we even included them.
Okay, so you don't even... I see what's going on.
The light blue.
Thank you, Joe. The percentages on the right, we don't even need. You've got the bars that are showing the percentage. So 67% roughly are active. Okay, thank goodness. All right.
67%.
Look at the far right light blue bar.
Right. Out of the red or the yellow?
Out of the blue.
Out of the blue. So that's how many can.
The blue out of the blue.
Yeah. And it's you know, the numbers are lower for Peeler. You see about a little over 50% of folks that are eligible to pick up their license and actually report to the harvest.
So you're telling me that this 400 has been kind of steady for quite some time?
The number has. I don't think the individuals, you know, probably half the individuals have been, maybe half just to come and go. We'll find out.
Yeah, well, most of us all know we're all watermen when we jump from one business to another, all depending on them.
Yep.
And doing anything with those 400 people, I'm against that big time.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's been there for a long time. And they mentioned about, you know, if the stock went up, they may jump in.
Yep.
Well,
some.
That may not happen for 2 or 3 years. I don't see why we're going down now when that's not happening yet. Maybe we should wait until we see a rebound before we consider taking somebody out of the business that's not even in the business to start with.
Well, you know, you can get lost in all this information, but take a look at, we don't have it here, Joe may have a slide. In 2012, if you remember in the spring, in just the month of March, the harvest got to be 2.4 million pounds, just in 14 days of March, and from 17th to 31st, and the number of harvesters doubled. Where did they all come from? Were they all harvesters who hadn't harvested before? No, but some were. I mean, that was really astounding. And then the rest of the year fizzled out after April and May. The rest of 2012 wasn't anything to write home about. So there's definitely enough to keep the entire staff busy doing nothing else but trying to look at this information. But we should start looking at something.
Yeah.
And if the committee wants us to look at, to start off with something fairly straightforward, would be to look at this 400, this 400 number, and look to see how many of that 400 number have been in that, they haven't crabbed for 1 year, 2 years, 3 years, 5 years, and just come back and let you know. I mean, otherwise, we're spinning our wheels trying to figure out what goes on if there's a bump up in the crab harvest, or do they just come in for other reasons?
Yeah, I think more about it on the 5 year period. Anybody hadn't done it in 5 years probably don't have any plans to.
We should take a look at that, which we can do without you know, spending a lot of time on that. But we can look at that. But as you can see, some of the things we haven't even explored. I don't think any of us have really looked to see exactly who got in that spring of 2012. Yet we've heard the complaints from the crab committee many times. We've heard, oh, so you're going to save crabs in the fall so everyone can come in the spring and just snatch them up. I mean, we've heard that many times. And you see that this March is going to be lower bushel runs than at other times.
Especially hear that from other jurisdictions like Tom Curran and Maryland. You know, actually, we got an email, go down the bay, and then we just kept them all in spring.
Right. And then we know the converse of that. What the heck are you doing taking our females up there? So I think we're getting some pretty good ideas. I think your ideas, I mean, I have to say those ideas should hit home with all of us, that, you know, it'd be really, I would think the commission would be in keeping with their rebuilding status that they're after. You know, crabs haven't rebuilt yet. I'm not sure whether we have to expect this 215 million female age one plus crabs 2 or 3 years in a row, but we sure as heck can't be down near where it looks terrible, down near 70 million female crabs. We can't have that. But while we're rebuilding, it makes sense that effort has to be tied to abundance. So, I mean, I like that.
If I could, from the Marshall said,
you know,
the perfect time to do effort control measures is now. When the stock is down, when effort is down. If you wait until the stock rebounds, get all the extra effort out there, all you're going to do is have a whole bunch of people coming in here complaining, well, I'm in it now, I've invested in it now, I don't want to get out. You know, effort control, if you do it after the fact, when everything's great, it's near impossible to do it.
I agree with that, but I want to know what the effort is in the year you were talking about when some of the people jumped in and made some of those 400. So
we're going to look at that.
How much effort that was.
We're going to look
if it was a lot of people,
right.
Just a few people taking a lot of boxes.
So far, I think we can look at the 400 issue, and we can look at that March issue to see who came in and got out.
Yeah.
Now, there's nothing wrong with doing that. I mean, as you said, watermen typically move from fishery to fishery. But there may be something wrong if I hear so many comments from those who say, I'm full-time, who don't like the fact that there's a lot of hit-and-run crabbing going where people get in, get out, they can afford to get in and take some, they're really not worried about crabbing being a part of their major part of their income, which others say it's a major part of their income. We do it pretty much throughout the year. So, you know, the commission's going to have to hear about these things. But I think they'd like to do something tied to abundance. I really do.
Well, I know it can't be today, but the next meeting when we have maybe more people here and stuff and more information, that's something we can discuss.
Yeah. Well, you know, there's something that I don't think you may have seen some of you in the past, but Jim Kirkley, who passed away in 2011, he was an economist over at DIMS, and he put together a set of information that went from 1997 to 2010. And it told us that except for 1997 and 2010, no other year was there the right amount of effort in the fishery. Every other year had too much effort, and there was, in fact, a lot of the overfishing going on in a lot of those years. 97 and 2010 were the only 2 years where the effort didn't outstrip the harvest available to make an overfishing problem or some other problem. So it kind of ties in with, you know, what you're talking about, in that we can't just pretend that there's a complete disconnect between effort and abundance. There's not. There is to some extent. I mean, some people just get in because they have to, or they're compelled to, or they, you know, whatever the reason. But a lot of people, if they're going to come in, they're going to do what Joe's indicating. They're going to wait till they hear that things are pretty good, till their neighbor, their friend, or whoever's doing what, and, you know, they can afford to get back in. I don't know.
But most of the time...
It takes a lot of money to get back in.
Most of the time, there's too much effort for the amount of stock we have.
Right.
Already. Yeah. I'll predict the same thing will happen next year at Orchard Grove. If I had been over 2 years, you don't have a whole lot more next year. But that's always the case. If Mark's catching a load of dogs, if people are going to do that too, that's
right.
Yeah. But that's human nature. Yeah.
Want to see a few more slides before we continue?
Well, yeah, going back to I mean, the numbers in 2008, they were required to come to the commission and actually fill out an application. Tracking the numbers since 2008. 2012 was a high point when we put in a cap. Cap actually included a 10% increase from the number 153 that we had in 2012. So this year we actually had, for the first time, we actually had more than the 2012 number. And as Rob said, we had 51 of those that weren't even there in 2012. We've got some new people in, they're still moving around. A few of them that transferred through, there have been a few hardship exceptions. You know, it's hard to track who the individuals are. There's a small chunk of people that have been using this every year since we started recording in 2008. You know, you see them all 7 years or so. And then the numbers that have used it for 5 or 6 years are a little higher. It gets about 50 people that use it for at least 5 or 6 years. And when they do, it's consecutive. Either they were using it in their early years and now just dropped off, so they probably got not only a crab fishery, but probably just got rid of their car.
Do we know of the people that use agents? Do they generally use the same agent over and over, or do they switch around different people?
I happen to be close to where this comes in, and they will switch, you know, two or three times, get different agents. I mean, not a lot, but, you know, it's not uncommon.
Okay.
So what you're saying is most of the agents are working with somebody who has another license and they're trying to make the rate better.
No, that's not. They can't do that. And for this time frame, you can't be an agent if you have a craft license.
But they're over. You have a craft agent. I'm counting them proud to. I'm going to have another 255 pots. I'll get another car, and I'll get an agent or something, and put it in the car. But is that most of these agents, are they working with somebody who has the license?
But you can only have the highest number.
They can be, but they license the vessel limit.
Yeah, right.
You
know,
we
weigh
the highest.
You don't weigh the highest.
I've never looked.
So you don't know if it's people just trying to get the reds bigger by getting this agent, or is it just people that...
See, the way the licensees report... Since the licensees have to report, it's tough to know exactly what the agents are up to. Because the licensee is responsible for the report. I think that's what Adam says.
Regardless, they have a vessel limit. So you can have the biggest rig in the world, but you still got a vessel limit. because it could be used in two codes.
Yeah.
In other words, this guy could have, like me, I could have him fishing my car.
Right.
And I could be crabbing on my wife's license or somebody else's license if they had a crab.
You couldn't be an merchant in that case because you might have a license.
Doesn't work.
Once you have a license of any type in your name, you don't get to be an agent.
I got you.
Now, your wife could have someone else who's not licensed go ahead and be on the second boat while you're on the first boat.
I got you.
I mean, so you're not incorrect. It's just that that's one of the changes we made was to prevent license stacking.
I've got a question for you. I don't even know if this is true or not, but I know back in the field net fishery a few years ago, you had agents for people, and it had to do something with people coming from Maryland. And then what y'all did is had made sure that the agent, if you had a Maryland license, you had to have a Maryland agent or a Virginia. Is that correct?
Well, the eligibility, but no, but it, along those lines, when we created a Class A and Class B gill net permit, they are resident specific. And if you were going to transfer your class, that might be what you're thinking. If you're going to transfer your Class A gill net permit,
right,
and you're a non-resident, you can only, you know, would transfer would be to a non-resident.
Okay, so okay.
A Virginia right. resident couldn't transfer their
Class
A gill net to a Maryland.
Okay.
If a Maryland crab has a, can they be an agent for somebody in Virginia?
Yeah.
A license in Maryland?
Yeah.
If they don't have a Virginia crab license.
But you could have.
You're devious. You can
he's up there on the line.
Yeah, you're up close to the line.
My question is this. If you've got a Virginia license, okay, and you're a Virginia resident, and you get somebody from out of state to come in and be your agent, how can they do that based on the fact that y'all have out of state licenses and they have to pay more money? Like, you follow where I'm going with that?
An agent can be anyone.
No matter what, doesn't
outside
matter.
Outside,
okay.
Right now, come on in and be my agent.
They're not paying any fees.
Yeah, okay. They're not the ones paying.
They're not paying
okay.
fees. There is no agent license.
Okay.
Now, don't forget, if the agent messes up a couple of times,
well,
then come see the commission. And if it messes up real bad, then the licensee can come see the commission.
Do
you haven't
really
seen that yet, but it's there.
Do you enforce that, though? I understand y'all are doing a great job with the oysters, but I'm going to tell you point blank. I'd like to see greater enforcement of the laws on crabs and have harsher, you know, ramifications for these people that are breaking the law.
Increase the fines. All violations are considered for the commission. Just right now, you're seeing more oyster violations.
Right.
This is the most prevalent one to come to home system, but everything is considered. We have had fin fish offender cases in front of the commission. I think we've had a crab one already.
You did.
And others will come, but.
Good.
You just see a lot of oyster ones now because there's a lot of oyster violations.
Well, another thing about it, too, is, you know, we did go through the committees, and I think that we've got some new members here, but when we were ranking the violations,
mm-hmm.
There wasn't anything that said in the crab fishery that said, hey, just one offense is worthy of bringing you before the commission. It was more along the lines of, you know, that could something that would land you on probation and then this, you
right.
know.
I mean, our numbers are down.
A lot of two strikes.
We need to do more. Our numbers are down. Whether or not they're going to rebound this year, that's
yeah, there's been big improvements, and at a later date, did everyone get a copy of the law enforcement subcommittee report that some of you participate in? We'll make sure when you send out an email for the meeting,
yeah.
put that report along with the email.
if you get the file, it's a huge file.
Well, no, just put the tables.
Okay.
The
yeah.
table.
Yeah.
We have tables that the commission looks at.
Yeah.
And part of what we're trying to do is advise the commission. I know we're getting off subject here a little bit. We're trying to advise the commission what needs to be changed. Right now, they're just guidelines. And a lot of times I've heard the commission say, wait a minute, this isn't stiff enough. We want to do more than that. And they do. So it's a continuous process with the committees. You'll be the first committee to get involved in the continuous process. But we need more input on that. There's some things that may not even be in there, but it'll just be four pages of tables, I think, that you can look at to see what's going on. But trust me, compared to what happened before 2013, I only saw maybe three or four cases in 20 years that came before the commission for three violations. I mean, because what would happen is the person committing the violations, it's in 12 months, they commit a couple, and then the third one, they just get it postponed. So all of a sudden, they were no longer in 12 months. I mean, it was really, really bad. So we've made great improvements. Joe will send you those four tables. Let's see what else you have here so we can...
So the numbers have increased, and so as the percentage, you know, and this, Chris, this goes back to your question. So, you know, we're, if they ask for an agent, we're assuming that that harvest is coming from that agent during that time. And the percentage by those agents has increased since we've been able to track it. And whatever that trend, I think one of the interesting things is, you know, we saw 2010 and 2011 were both pretty decent years, but something has changed with the way people, you know, with the way the agents were. The numbers started climbing, the number of agents you started climbing, and the percentage of the harvest that they're accounting for is climbing too. So.
I think that makes sense to me, that trend.
Do you have a breakdown of the size license that the agents are or anything?
Yeah, I've done it.
But that's only 9% at its height of the harvest. 9% of the harvest in 2013 was from agents.
Yeah. But it's just, you know, it's in the range of 125 people. So.
Right.
You know, they're active. Yeah. The biggest license, about 50% of the agents are from what used to be the 300. The next largest is the 85, and then the rest just falling in the smaller percentage.
I thought the 85 would probably have the largest number of agents.
Yeah, we had a question. George Falls was here, and he asked from the audience last time. He said his assumption was it would be the smaller license categories. But
that's right.
You know, the 255, the old 300 is the biggest license category. If you looked at the eligibility, that's where most of the licenses exist. Mm-hmm. You know, that's where most of the activity exists, so... It's in that sense, it's not that surprising that there's more agents from there, just because that's what most of the license holders have.
Now, as far as like areas in which they fish, are they fishing mostly in tributaries or are they fishing in the bay? I mean, I'm just kind of.
You gotta ask that last month, and I could have had it for you.
And the reason I ask that is because it seems to me like the largest problem that I've heard and seen and everything is the agents in the rivers and stuff like that. You know, people complain more about that than in the bay itself.
That'd be good to look at. Yeah, that's a good one. Maybe pick a year like 2010 and then pick a year like 2013, the good and the bad.
Yeah.
To where they were harvesting. Or where the licensees reported.
Right. And y'all have some coming up this commission meeting.
Yeah, this commission meeting is pretty much status quo for right now. They already last month, the commission was informed that you're working on this situation, that it could be changes, it could even be controversial, because there are some that hold pretty tightly to using agents for whatever reasons. So we've already told the commission that. But, you know, I think if you try to force something, obviously, you're not going to be able to force something tonight with the few that are here. But, you know, if everyone had been here, I still would have recommended, let's wait. Let's make sure everyone is on board with what a change should be to the agent situation. And then let's also have a meeting where those who really have to have agents or else kind of situation, where they can have their input to the committee rather than derail the whole issue at the commission. So that's the plan I have. I hope that sits better.
No, if we decide that we're kind of, you know, we want to sway away from the 140 some or however many agents that will be this year, would you all act upon something this year? Or would it be better just to wait for next year? I mean, how's the staff
It'd be
that?
Confusing to do it this year, probably, I think. Joe, Chris, and I talked a little bit earlier today. You know, we allow 100 transfers. Maybe what would make everyone think a little bit better about agents were if we capped the number. You know, right now it's capped, I think, fairly high. 168 is a fairly high number. Maybe there's a cap. There's 100 transfers a year allowed. Relatives can transfer and not count as the 100. This is a license transfer. So maybe the agent transfer boils, or the agent situation boils down to just a baseline number that you have. Some will fall by the wayside, and some won't. I mean, what you saw from Joe, which makes me think about that a little more, is 51 were brand new use of agents in 2014. So that tells me out of the 168, you know, we didn't need to have 168. And only 124, what was that statistic? 124 were active or something? What was that?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, 124 active.
Even though people came in.
So, you know, maybe. Maybe this is has two faces. One face is we get wrapped around with the agent, the abundance. Although I'd rather do that for the latent effort, the inactive effort, and maybe the agents can come down to a cap, which is more of a reasonable cap. Maybe that way it's not a big fight at the OK Corral that we end up in.
If you put cap on agents a little bit, you have to apply the first number to apply? Or?
Well, you'd have to tell us what criteria there should be. Right now, the only criteria we have is that 2012 licensee. You may want something a little more substantial, you know, because obviously if 51 of the 2012 group didn't even bother in 2014, it's not a really good criteria.
But you did have returning agents.
Oh, yeah.
The year before.
Oh, yeah.
So there's always a hurricane of those people staying there from what?
Didn't you say earlier, Joe, that you had looked at back further?
Yeah, and for the complete time series, for all 7 years that we had.
From 2008 on.
That's a small number, but, you know, some of them do drop off.
Yeah, do you have
But it's about 50 that use it 5 or 6 years.
Ron. I was thinking of this and didn't talk about it, but one thing that concerns me about the cap is where we end up, in, at least possibly, and I think the commission can deal with this, basically hurting someone who is trying to legitimately use an agent. And when I say legitimately use an agent, I think what was intended, which was
right.
If you get hurt, get sick, you have to go, someone has to fish for you. It would seem to me that maybe a better approach would be for the, now that we have record of the agents, is to maybe give those, whatever the number is of agents who are using this as a business decision, you know, they're out there, they're not injured, hurt, things like that, but maybe give them 4 years to transfer a license and not count that versus the 100 or something along those lines. So we get agency back to what it was originally intended over a couple of years, and we you know, these folks who, like you say, we don't want to have the big issue at the commission meeting about this, but we give them a path basically to get into the fishery. Legally is the wrong term, but under what we should see as licensing for that. And I don't know if that's something that might be workable, but
I'm not sure I tracked all that. What do you, try again.
Well, so let's say we pick an arbitrary number and say you can't have so many agents per year. I feel like we end up at some point we're going to have somebody who is, you know, going to fall by the wayside because we've hit the number of 100 agents.
But well, you've got the five hardships that the commissioner approves.
Right.
You always have
right.
that route for.
So, but I think looking at this long term,
okay.
Let's try to get agency back to those five hardships and give the folks who have been using agents, you know, we have really good data for the last couple of years, basically 4 years to transfer a license in some way, shape, or form and get them out of using agents as kind of a business decision.
The problem with that is if they transfer a license, it's what we all talk about all the time. Essentially, they're not active. Their agent is active. Now, or may not be active. Even from 2008, only 50 sums have been 5 or 6 years.
Yeah.
So you're setting up a situation where you could find someone who takes the transfer, buys the license, and they capitalize big time. So effort, again, is really, you know, I have a suspicion, and I haven't looked, that some of these agents, if they're only 9%, there's 124 out of mostly crap. This is mostly crap pot.
Oh, yeah.
Mostly crap pot. Out of 820, okay? They produced 9% of the harvest. So I think some of them are not really spending a lot of time out there. And so my concern with your proposal would be that this would be what we don't want, which is taking latent effort, essentially, and turning it into active effort.
Stop them from transferring right now.
Right.
I mean, so I don't understand the four-year period part, because there's nothing to stop them from transferring right now. We're already talking about going to a reduction, getting it back to where agent is supposed to be. Based on all we hear in the committee meeting every month, then a year's warning is enough. I mean, what 4 years down the road, what is the 4 years gaining anybody?
What I think is going to happen if we were to say a year, that we would have, you know, the people standing out the doorway saying, I've done this for the last 8 to 10 years. You know, for 5 years, whatever it is, and I think we're going to end up with the commission maybe not having the stomach to say we're going to adhere to this.
I think what we need to do is to profile. Joe's done some of it, and we really need to profile from 2008 on.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you have every year broken out? You do.
Yeah, not here.
Not here. Okay. So, what everyone needs to see is the history of licensee use of agents, because I guarantee you what will happen is if you recommended 80 agents, everyone who's had an agent would be the first one in to get in their application. But it'd be better if we could show that there were 80, I'm just making that number up now, that there were 80 who were dedicated users of agents for whatever reason, that they really depended on agents. What that would do, if it were 80, it would probably knock it down to 5 or 6% of the harvest instead of 9% of the harvest. And it would probably avoid what I think happened in 2014 is crabbers who were, we're going to find out, who were inactive, all of a sudden said, hey, I'm going to get an agent and I'm going to be active. There's so much we haven't picked apart this data yet that needs to be done. I mean, if your proposition were that after 4 years, you know, licenses were no longer available or something, I mean, that'd be different. I don't think we'd be gaining anything this way. I don't think we'd gain anything. I think we really need to pick this apart. My fellow staff members behind me don't know that I've been sitting at home. I did get out in the snow, as I said yesterday morning. But I've also been thinking about, you know, whether you know it or not, we don't get the opportunity to work on blue crab issues as much as we really should. And, you know, that to me is a real shame. And I have been, you know, thinking how I'm going to break it to the staff that we're going to learn from now until probably May to shove some things aside so that we can start digging into blue crab issues and, you know, not have to do it all in 2 weeks. I mean, over time, really most of the work we do is in a matter of weeks, and it should be months. So you've got a lot of stuff coming down on you because, you know, we're all in this together. We've got allocation to have a scheme for that by 2018. That has to start. That needs your help. We've got another crab judge survey coming out as late as May 1. I hope we'll have the results. That depends on what we do about the existing regulation, which runs through July 4th of 2015. I mean, it really takes a lot of effort, and we're a handful of people. So I'm going to make the commitment at least that I'll get back to doing more in the crab world, but so will my staff members help me out on that. And this is a perfect example. If we had a bigger staff, we would have had time to ground truth what we think we should look at, and you'd have everything that came up tonight, you'd have most of it. But there's a lot of things going on. So you should know that. You should know the kind of situation that we have as a staff. You know, we do a great job. I mean, I'll be the first to tell you that. I think we do a great job for what we're able to do, but we would like to do a lot more because crabs are, in a bad year, are like $29 million dock side value.
It's a big picture.
In a bad year. And so no offense to the oyster world, but the crab fishery is pretty big. And it's historical. I mean, you haven't seen the problems with the crab fishery over time. There's always been a stable fishery. It's just been up and down a little bit. So I want a crab management division. Please send in your letters to Commissioner John Bolt.
You want what?
The crab management division. I want a separate division for crabs. Let's hire a few more people. Let's get going.
Wait, I'll probably have to talk to you guys.
Bob, will you let me know when
you can be on staff.
Have a meeting on picking apart this agent deal. We're been at this 1 hour and 15 minutes, and we no further now than we were when we started. So let me know.
We are way ahead. We have made severe progress. We're talking about futuristic plans here, Dan. We're thinking of a smaller agent group, but we want to show everyone the data first. So we're thinking.
Well, it took you a minute to summarize it, and we've been talking about an hour and 10.
That's okay. That's all right. We're just here enjoying each other's company. What's on your mind?
Oh, you know what's on my mind. Sanctuary.
Yeah.
Okay, it's time to shift.
Sanctuary.
All right, we have enough marching orders for what to look at, and we'll come up with some other information. I think you see pretty quickly from some of the comments that there are things that we can look at here on the agent issue. So let's talk about sanctuary. Dan, you want to talk about sanctuary first? Marshall?
Well,
first.
Okay. Marshall mentioned it first. Let
yep.
him go.
I'm interested if Ron had any information, but we kind of drilled him last time for.
Can you hear that?
Yeah.
He was talking about, you know, shrinking it, closing it for all year, making it smaller and different things, and he said he'd have some problems.
Well, so I've been going back and taking a look at the sanctuary and various things that have come up, and what I concluded is basically that we should start basically a discussion on what things you would like to see. Because, I mean, I could come up with a bunch of things, but I'm not really sure that they're going to be what you want. The only thing I know so far that you want are two things. One, that you want a strip opened up down near Lynn Haven, and that you also want maybe a later open. So, and what we drew up with staff several months ago, after we did the dredge mortality study, we showed you what we thought you could have the dredge fishery, for instance, but we did not, and part of that meant closing off the lower part of the bay, right, around the historical sanctuary and stuff. So, I've been going, like, all over the place, really trying to figure out, okay, what is it that you guys want, and I think that the main thing would be, okay, what are the possible options that you'd like to see change in the sanctuary? Then I could look at each one of those with staff and try to figure out what the implications of that would be and what sort of compensation you might need. But I really think I want to flip it back into your court so that I don't sort of spin my wheels on something that you're going to say, we don't even want to consider that or whatever.
Well, I thought we had talked about we mentioned about making it smaller, reducing the size.
Yeah, but I mean, that we could
close it for the year, close the rest of it for the year,
yeah.
Making it smaller. I thought that was the big issue that you were going.
That is, but I think I need to get more details because I was going through that as far as making it smaller. You know, just cutting out the little part down near Lynn Haven, for instance, that would make it smaller. Are there other sections where you'd like to see it small, where it would help?
About the entire length of it. The width of it, the entire length.
Yeah, I know. So the issue really is how much. And how much you're willing then to trade off with some of the other, whatever the other regulations would be. My sense is that, and Rob can probably speak to this better than I, but my sense is that the commission at this point is only going to consider measures that are compensated. That is, I don't...
Well, we were talking about closing for the year.
Year round,
but in process making it smaller, but close what was
right.
Left for year round. That's one of the things we talked a lot about last time.
Okay, so you want that closed, and then... So what I think of you is where do you want it reduced? If you wanted that closed, where would you want it reduced? That's the sort of information I need.
Do we really need to have it reduced, or do we need to change the tanks? Would it be better for y'all if the bay to have a bigger area to crab, or would it be better for y'all to have the dates changed, or, you know, that's really what you need to look at.
The dates are going to be the easiest for Rom to start, and really, what we talked about last time, other than what Mark brought up on the lower part of the sanctuary, there were ideas about shaving off certain areas, but we never pinpointed where. But keep in mind, Johnny Graham and some others still like the idea of these upper river sanctuary areas that may be used as compensation or mitigation for changing the sanctuary. And so to me, right now, in absence of those folks today, if Ron can get started, and he has been thinking about it, but we haven't nailed anything down, then I think you're looking at what would it be like to change the dates by a week, by 2 weeks, close the historic 1942 sanctuary year-round, modify the lower end, the Lynn Haven end, I guess is what Mark is interested in. The Southern Shore. Those are the three concrete ideas that maybe we can work with Rom on. The difficult part is you're trying to compensate for spawning, essentially, spawning potential. That's what you're trying to compensate. So it's not going to be an easy thing to say, well, you gain, if you have a year-round closure of the historical sanctuary, then you would gain X amount of spawning potential. But if you cut out a week or even 2 weeks in terms of the closure, then you would lose X amount of spawning potential. Those are the kind of things that have to be looked at. So if everyone understands...
When was the last study done? I mean, how do we know what we're compensating?
I think 2002, but Rom can tell us. Was 2002 the last comprehensive network study?
No, actually, we finished that in 2005.
2005.
And then we also had the tag return data, so it was that even after that. But
2005, you mean to tell me we're going to go on compensation by study from 2005 and all of our regulations are done on a yearly annual crab thread survey? You've got to be kidding me, Rom.
No, that's not what I said, man. What I said...
Can you hear Rom?
He was at... Can you hear me?
Come on up here, Rom, so you can hear me. Just a minute, Dan.
All right.
Hey, Dan, I didn't say that's what those are the studies that on which the regulations and so on are our conclusions based. What I would have to do to look at any of this, any of these changes, I would actually look at the winter dredge survey data in combination with the Virginia trawl, Vince trawl survey data, test map data, that's a different survey, and then also with staff with landings. All those would be current. It wouldn't be going back, you know, 10, 12 years or so, Dan.
Okay.
So that's why I need to know, that's why I need to know some more specific details. That way I can go back to the data and take a look at the appropriate data as opposed to just sort of drawing up any kind of general thing.
All right. I mean, I know you know my feeling on this. We up here at the upper end of the bay, and I'm not if the down, if the low, I understand the lower part wants it too. I'm not trying to start an upper bay, lower bay kind of thing. But up here in this midpoint area, you're just getting started in May. I mean, it ain't even going to go there until May, and it's especially on a real cold winter. I mean, you're not, and most of the time in this midpoint area, you're getting givens. I mean, it's not like you're coming in loaded with soaks. And I don't know. It's just I don't understand how we can say let's do this and let's do that if we don't know what's being compensated. I mean,
right. So Dan, if you had, what would be your suggestion about changing? I'm assuming it's changing the start date or reducing it up there. What is it that you'd like to have us examine?
Either the start date needs to get moved back, or it needs to be wallet, or you know, not wallet, shrink. I mean, when that comes in May 15th, all you're doing up here to the ones that has nothing to do but hauler drive, you're shoving them in, you know, in here around these target ships, like in here around this end ship, and there's nothing near them.
So
they're all gone. I mean, you know, there's not a run in here on this sand like it is up and down the shore, and it's just you're shoving everybody in one big knot, which I know you are everywhere, but it's just anything. I mean, even so that we could just wire it a little further, or perhaps, you know, start it June the way it used to be.
So you're talking about June 1st?
That's, ain't that what it used to be? Did it used to start June?
For many, many years, yes, it did. So, you know, for the purposes of the commission, we probably look at a week and then 2 weeks. And on the western shore, we've heard the same thing, the upper western shore, as far as the timing. I remember the Smiths telling us pretty clearly that, you know, it's much later over there than it is in the lower bay. So it's really an upper bay situation.
Go back to what I said before. It's geographical location and water temperature.
Yeah.
You know, what benefits one kills another. It's got to be somewhere.
I think what would be, you know, what I just thought about might be something, Dan. So, you know, you still get crabbers out there. They just have to really narrow into certain areas to try and find anything before the sanctuary really hits.
Yeah, I mean, and you take like last year, there was absolutely nothing in shore here.
Right.
And when everybody had to move in, everybody just ended up, I mean, a lot of them just took up. One or two of them went over on, you know, you had more crabbing on the creeks on the shore. And it's just out of, you know, there's nowhere else to go. Or else, you know.
I guess what I'm saying.
You know you're going to make nothing if you don't leave the dock. You know. Just everybody's in one knot, or they're up, you know, way up the creek. Or I mean, for me, I'm fouling on this. I mean, and I'm talking to, you know, my parents. I have filler by license. I go filler, and I have another option. But to the ones that do nothing but holler crab, they're at it. I mean, that's a holler time of year from May 15th to about June 15th. That's a holler time of year.
I guess what I'm driving at is. The perception may be that the sanctuary, when it closes to harvest on May 16th, keeps everyone on the shore. And that's really not what happens. It just makes life very difficult, and the catch is much less than they might be if the sanctuary was still open. But I think we could look at geographical areas to see what the harvest is like with the sanctuary the way it's been. And one thing the commission should hear is that it's going to be an increase, but it's not going to be the kind of increase that they would expect. You see what I'm getting at? In other words, it's not as if everyone is just completely inactive. It's just that you don't have the same opportunities or the abilities to get the amount of catch that you would get if the sanctuary were open until June 1, let's say.
Right.
And on the Western Shore, from what I've always heard before, that, you know, it's getting pretty much in mid-April before you really start to see things like they see it down below. Mid-April, a little bit more.
Last year down here, I think you said you were familiar with it, Rob, down here to Goatall. Did you go Grudgy McClellan on that survey down here to Goatall?
I was with Jimmy Dean, but
down here to Goatall, that's when you're talking up this way, Goatall will start a little bit earlier than the buoys. And Goatall was still around the 20th of April, 20th, you know, somewhere in that time frame before they started catching any minor crab. Well, you're talking, once it picked up fairly decent, you're talking 3 weeks. And you know, once that dollar, most people will, you know, we used to be able to go up around the turn buoy from the outside of the target chips out in that 40, 50 foot. And go up around the turn buoy and get on some jimmies, and that's just before Memorial Day. And most years, by rule, people are going nuts for jimmies that time of year. And I mean, it's going now. It's just going. And then all you have to do is just look above the line, and you've got Marylanders with Virginia license. That go from the line up, they go in with their Virginia limit while they're crabbing in Maryland because they're able to with their Virginia license. And they're catching the crab that we can. And it's a bad situation.
Okay, well, I think we have a way to look at, I don't know why we're calling it compensation, but we'll call it compensation just based on effort and harvest, as well as what Ron wants to start looking at in terms of spawning potential or something else. But I'm kind of glad that you talked about this, because it does mean that we can tell the commission that female crabs are taken in the sanctuary prior to being closing in the southern end down below, but female crabs are being taken near the upper end because people have to work. And on the Western Shore, because people have to work, doing something, even in April, mid-April on. So maybe there's some way that this is not a huge increase at all.
Well, I got to run, Rob. I did want to get that in, but I got to run.
Well, you did good.
But if you want a quick fix, get rid of that. Here's something real quick, and I'll give it to you in 5 seconds. Get rid of that 9% agent, open up a sanctuary, there's your compensation.
Okay, start a war.
All right, see you later, Rob.
Take care.
See y'all. Yeah.
Let me ask you guys, on the what would make life easier in terms of assessing the effect?
Before you start there? He mentioned how you know people are going somewhere where they can't catch, but he didn't mention the fact that P&J men are staying in St. Charles a lot longer now,
right.
And they're catching busted hooks.
Mm-hmm.
To me, if you get them away from St. Charles catching the busted hooks back in the upper bay, I think your compensation right there would probably, if you get back and look at the harvest in that area itself, you see a great
deal. Low Eastern Shore, if you look at it on your mandatory reporting, Low Eastern Shore, you'll see it over a period of years.
Oh,
that's steady.
Let me just ask you though. It would make it simpler for me to make the calculations. If you told me, I was thinking of a strip that would start near the mouth of the James River, where the sanctuary goes down and hits the shore. Start somewhere there, go down to Cape Henry, and just make a strip that runs all along the coast there, the shoreline. that would be open. That's what I would need.
Well, he was talking about the upper bay.
No, I know he was. I've already got what he's talking about.
Okay.
So I'm talking about for the lower bay, what kind of distance from shore?
You basically, if you start at Cape Henry Light, go offshore.
30 foot.
You know, the 30 foot contour of Cape Henry.
Simple Shoals Channel.
Yeah, I mean, if you want ease, go to Simple Shoals Channel, but the reality of it, we don't work there.
Following. If you just go a straight line across and go like the Willoughby Spit or whatever, following the channel, that'd be great, but we don't need that.
We said last time, we said go from Cape Henry Light.
Yeah, I mean, it would be simple to go from Cape Henry Light
to the small boat channel?
To the 2 mile marker on the bridge tunnel.
Okay, yeah.
To the outer bell buoy of Little Creek, and then straight line to Harrison's Fishing Pier. That right there. I mean, that's realistically where we need more.
Cape Henry Light to the 2 mile marker.
Yeah.
At and the Little Creek,
Outer Bell Buoy.
I hope it's still there.
Yeah, it's a red
there.
Yeah.
And then finally to
just like the Harrison's Fishing Pier.
What was the fourth thing you said?
Fourth spot. Just like the Harrison's Fishing Pier.
Harrison.
You can't be like 2 mile marker.
Bell Buoy and Little Creek.
Whatever the heck it is.
So Lynn can't be here. Lynn's on the commission. Jimmy Dean's on the commission. Once we have the survey results, and then by that time we'll be meeting, if there's anything that needs to come before the commission, it would really help. You know, staff doesn't mind presenting information. DIMS can present information, but it really helps the commission to see someone from the committee up here explaining to them, because they're usually used to the audience yelling at them, but if someone's up here explaining to them why there needs to be changes and what those changes are, that really helps. So I think it's important to look at the harvester basis and get a handle on what's being harvested in the areas that are impacted in the early spring by the sanctuary. I'm talking upper areas now. What's impacted there, and really, if it were open, how much change could there really be? So I think that's something we can look at separate of probably the way Rahm is going to treat the female crab issue at that time of year in the upper sanctuary. So we have some ideas to go forward, and that's really good. We've done that.
The other thing is, I know you can do off the Virginia Beach, no problem without going to the General Assembly. You know, I keep mentioning that, and you've seen it in Whitehaven yourself. There's so much pressure in there, we can't work. We don't make any money anymore. You know, I mean, this year, probably, I'm going to crab Whitehaven in the spring, but I'm going to go right back to Cape Charles to crab. So you're going to put me in Cape Charles catching all these butts and hook.
Mm-hmm.
There's going to be more pressure there. You know, I've stayed in Windhaven now for the last, 6 years? You know, I'm going to get back to Cape Charles. So if you could open up the ocean for us, that sure would be a whole lot better.
Now, if we're talking Area 4, that area from basically Cape Henry south.
Yeah, south. Cause we don't have to go to Carolina Line, Rudy Emmett, Jack. You know, you could go to a 30-foot contour there. And also, you stated years past that. I mean, I could be wrong about this. The largest fluctuation of crabs in the world of bay is basically the latter part of June, July. Is that correct?
I would say that's most of the movement
right
down at that time.
Yeah.
I mean, we've got Maryland later on.
Yeah, but the lower bay, that's about what it is. I mean, to me, aggregation probably shouldn't be a problem because really there's no crabs there.
There are only four people working there.
Yeah, there's nobody. And so believe right. me, you know, you're going to get wiped out if you get it. I mean, I've seen it. nobody's going to go there. The reality of it is there's only three big crabbers left in Winhaven. Most of the other people have 85 pound licenses. Three. And we're going to go there.
Now, you talk about opening it year-round.
Well, no, I mean, just give us open it from whenever you decide to shut the sanctuary down in the lower bay. I think it's what, May 15th this year?
16th.
The 16th, from open up the from Cape Henry, flight, down around May 16th. And give us a place to go. You know, when you were doing all this sanctuary stuff, you know, I remember you saying this, if there's an issue with overcrowding and stuff like that, that you would address that problem as it came up, you know, and I'd like to see you address that problem by at least giving us something in the ocean for, you know, just a small area, just like the rest of the whole Chesapeake Bay. You can go up Smith Point out to 30 foot, you know, we can't. You know, we need a place to go to work.
Tell me something a little bit about what you know about what crabs do down there.
Down there?
So I'm talking about Cape Henry.
South?
South.
Well, I can tell you, you know, you've got this big thing about, oh, they're all busted hooks down there. No, they're not all busted hooks down there. The large majority, you know, I mean, even at Cape Charles, you know, you see fluctuations of crabs busting out, cleaning up, busting out. It's the same thing down there. The same crab that you catch at the ocean front is no different than the crab you catch, say, concrete ships or all the way up to, well, almost Hunger's Creek. About Hunger's Creek is when it really starts to change up. You know, I've crabbed in all those places. The crab at the ocean front is no different than the crab down at the lower.
Yeah, what I'm getting at is, so those crabs, many of those crabs would have come out of the bay and migrated down.
I know in the spring of the year, years ago when they dredged, they would actually catch crabs at the fishing pier. We'd follow them all the way on in. So, I mean, the crabs are coming from the ocean. They're on cold potters. What, they catch them 3 miles off in cold potters a couple of weeks ago? So, crabs do come back in the bay, which are female. I mean, we see a waves of them coming up the beach. I mean, we've seen that.
Well, they're coming in shore.
Yeah. But who's to say they're not coming from down south up around Oregon or whatever? You know?
Yeah, all the tagging stuff that we've had doesn't show much of a return movement back up.
Because there really aren't that many people crabbing down there, and they don't want to basically turn into tags. Why not?
Okay, so just to try to summarize, if I were to ask you, I'm going to flip the thing out, to ask you, tell me where a female comes from just before she mates.
I think she's coming from the upper bay. Or not the upper bay. I think
she's coming from the bay, and then she moves out.
Well, she doesn't necessarily move out. I mean, she moves, well, I guess probably moves in and out,
Okay, so, and right along the...
But they don't go way, way out. I don't know. I can't say that because I don't crab and
the only thing that we've had shows that much at all out there. But
I will say I do believe that crabs do move up in Carolina. I do believe that. I mean, I could be wrong. I don't know.
They don't want to talk to you about the big sanctuary. That's just what you do. So if you can run some numbers. Use, for example, we're going to stay from Virginia line down to the bridge. This is the entire sanctuary. And we'll use 4 miles. It's 4 miles wide. Right. You take a mile on the eastern shore and a mile on the western shore. That makes it 2 miles long all the way down. So you just use that for example. We're going to say it's 4 miles wide. You take a mile on the eastern shore and open it up, a mile on the western shore and open it up. You have a 2 mile strip. It flows you around.
Yeah, that's not the way I would normally approach it, just because I probably want to go look at the depth contours. The data we have, you know, we do have data by location, but the data that really was used initially to justify the sanctuary was the fact that we had the largest concentration of females was about 20 feet to about 40-some feet. So that was the largest concentration. So that's what allowed us to figure out what fraction of the spawning stock was there.
But my thing is that if you shrink it that and close it year round, I'm saying, okay, the way it is, let's say if you did what I said and nothing changed, you need catching more than losing more. At least you spread people out instead of putting people all in one great big knot. So you're going to say that by shrinking it, it's not going to have any effect. If you close it all year long, and by shrinking it, it's not going to have an effect at all. But it is going to have an effect because you don't put everybody jammed in one area. So even if it works out that, that there is no advantage to do it, as far as the crab's concerned, it's a big advantage to us to do it. That's my question. You know, what do you gain by closing it year-round compared to not being closed year-round and making it narrow?
So again, what I would do is I would use contours. I wouldn't just put it down like that.
I understand. I use that for example.
And, what happens if you use the 25, 30, 35 contours?
I'm going to be hard to convince that closing the year round isn't a big impact compared to the way it is now.
Are you saying narrow it but close it year round?
The narrow part, yes.
Okay. That's
what I said about balance. You're saying
that's number five.
Right. You know, that's the balance. You don't jam everybody in one area like you do now. You spread everybody out from it. How do you all feel about that?
Yeah, I think that's what we talked about that last meeting. I think if you can pull some contours and say year round, here's what our savings would be and so on and so forth, I think that's something we're very much.
And it helps us hand too. It helps them,
right.
because we've got a bigger area to crab, but we also have this one area that can't be around. So that's probably, if it equals zero, you know, you're saying, okay, it's not going to help the crab situation. It's not going to hurt it, but it does help.
Right. And that's the biggest problem as far as I can see. The rivers are the problem.
When you get up home, it comes inside a windmill light, so therefore you've got 4 or 5 feet of water is all you grab in.
So that's what I want to do.
Brings you there to something you can crab the edge, and it will take a lot of people at the river. That's what I mean to say.
So that would actually take care of all the other possibilities. Meaning, what I've got here, I've got five possibilities. Close the historic sanctuary year round.
I wouldn't object to that at all.
What
that
does,
we have.
Well, okay, so open a strip near Lynn Haven, change the start date by 1 to 2 weeks, have the ocean front around 30 foot contour. But really, if we can come up with a reduction in the sanctuary that follows the contour, that sort of takes care of all those.
Takes care of all that problem.
Right. Yeah, I mean, 25 foot contour takes care of all your issues down
right
there. Gives you guys something more.
It will give you a bigger area in the bay.
But they might have together. You lose more pot.
Right. I think that's a. So what I'm going to suggest is that the first thing we look at, and staff, is what happens if we reduce the contour line that the boundary follows.
Jibberdeans will fall subvert to Grand Virgin. Now, I don't know where that will fall.
Well, we put a sunset on this. You know, if it works, and we keep it. And if it doesn't, then do something else.
You had to bring that up, didn't you?
Well, he's going to
that's very simple. That's very simple. Year-round
you don't want him to get stressed.
Year-round for grab line. Year-round for grab line. Just close year-round for grab line.
That's fine.
Done.
Okay.
Yeah. Done. Dredge will be back as soon as we get some abundance.
It'll
come back.
I'm going to say it one more time. I've said it
a I know you have.
Not in my lifetime.
It's not
going to
happen anyway.
Not in my lifetime.
We're going to put you in a little tiny box.
You can put it just for crab.
Let me clarify that. The dredge issue will be back before the commission.
How many of you guys dredge?
Dredge issue. In other words, we'll bring it back to the commission.
31
dredge. It's been years.
31 dredge, 31 straight years. Never missed one.
All right. So you all have a dredge at all?
I haven't done it since the close.
But you're one of the eligible ones.
Yeah. Yeah.
I
we've got a good plan. It's just a matter of
doing statistics, doing numbers.
Oh, so this is good.
Did I read something about a break?
No breaks. No, I'm kidding. Go ahead.
Yeah,
take a break.
Yeah. So this is. You want this information by what? Summertime?
Tomorrow.
Next thing.
Okay. Well, you can't do anything.
Let's negotiate. You say tomorrow, I say
next
summer.
Next year.
I'd like it to be work on
that. Well, I mean, just before you break, we do have to talk about the timing of this because you've got us locked in altogether on a July regulation, which is supposed to sunset. I don't know what the commission's going to say when they see the results of the winter dredge survey. You know, it is a relatively new commission. I mean, some of the members are, you know, don't have a lot of tenure. So, you know, they need to hear some of the things that you're talking about. And so once Ron goes through this with our help, we'll probably want to get it orchestrated enough so it makes a nice package to the commission. But they really don't understand. I've never seen their eyes sort of acknowledge the problems of being a crabber with the sanctuary there. Because I've heard over and over again, you're congesting everybody, you're making everyone go up in the rivers and everything else. They need to hear it from the harvesters. They need to hear it from some of you. So I'm going to tell you again, once we go before the commission, definitely be there to help educate them, especially since some of these are new commissioners.
Do you remember the time I went to Richmond and spoke, and I told the people up there, reminded me of the dog. Because when I was talking to them, the funnels and bait boxes, in the dog. They had no damn clue what I was talking about.
Right.
But that is important to explain.
You know, you've got some folks who do know the industry that are on the commission. That helps. But you've got some that
don't.
They really
don't have a clue.
But, I mean, that makes a big difference. Your conversation is pretty important because I don't know how it will turn out. But the idea of getting rid of some of the complaints about jamming everyone up, about busted sooks being all that's available.
Is this something new? Did you release some kind of information about abundance or anything? Recently, I've been seeing news articles.
No, that's based on the Chesapeake Bay Program released their they report card, and that's where all those articles are being generated.
Okay.
Well, the other article in the Post about female migration. There was nothing new.
But the abundance articles you're seeing are all based on the fact.
Why are we even talking about those now, though? Because, I mean, we're having a new survey.
It's the dead of winter, and the environmental reporters need something to write about.
Is that what it is?
The Bay Program puts effort into generating press about that report, and crabs generate press.
Because, it's kind of bad timing is what it is.
It's a parallel to the foundation's report, and then you've got CBO's report.
That's all that it was.
Everybody wants to put out a report. So
old news.
Why do we need to talk about this now? We have a survey in progress right now. Let's talk about what the survey looks like now, not last year's information.
We didn't. But that's the reason for all the articles, because that got released, I guess, 2 weeks ago now.
Right. And how is the survey going?
We're almost done.
How's it looking?
It's looking better than last year.
Good. Why don't you release that?
I just said it's looking better than that.
I don't ask those questions. I learned a long time ago.
I know you go. But you heard it. That looking better. I could be one more female than last year. Could be.
Right. I look better.
Better's
better.
So.
Colder than last year.
Yeah.
Is it really?
A little bit.
Yeah. More ice like this. Right.
Right. Yeah. But more.
See, why?
Yeah. That reminds you of dress season.
The next 3 days.
But it cools. It cools fast, right? The water cools faster. So the Maryland County.
Just about
Yeah, I'm
on that.
So the area is shell band.
Yeah.
5:30 on 995, it's snowing. I'm like, uh-oh, I didn't get this quite right.
Them none of them milk.
No.
And it don't sound like none of them will milk.
No.
It didn't melt today. It ain't melting.
This is a funny way to have global warming, if you ask me.
Isn't nobody sitting up ready for this?
Yeah, I know Al Gore. Yeah. He's about to have a fit.
But you get to the central part of the country and only west, it's not good.
Yeah. I don't think the people in Boston would hurt nothing global warming right now.
Right. Okay, so I guess we still were on the sanctuary, and it sounds like Ron has a few ideas to work with. The biggest one is narrowing the sanctuary on both sides, right? Making a year-round closure, looking at those effects. Okay. Anyone else have other ideas on the sanctuary? Okay. How about something entirely different? We wanted to ask some questions. Sally's here. Sally, come on up and let's ask some questions. We're missing some of the young guys who were here last time, but we're going to the commission with this fish pot issue, which we talked about last meeting, where eel pots would be exempt. You'd have 10% allowance of your fish pots, except the upriver areas, which are defined already, would be exempt from the prohibition on having more than 10% of your fish pots while you have set your crab pots. So that means we went back and forth on how to do the setting, and we thought the only fair way was if you have set your crab pots, then you're limited to 10% of the fish pots to be chapter 30. Because there's a license, believe it or not, for greater than 300 fish pots, but it'd still be capped at 30. The part we're not sure about, some part we're not sure about. The young guys aren't here who are bringing it up on the.
Oh, for the mesh size?
Minnow fishermen. So. Younger guys.
The cap would exempt eel pots and then also pots that have a mesh size 1 inch or less, which are mostly used capture minnows, I guess.
Anyone do any minnow fishing?
No, but I know some people that do.
Yeah, I don't think we're doing
it. I thought they were smaller than that.
Yep.
We're
talking about the.
Well, the off the spot, that was the other.
The diagonal? 1 inch? Right?
The bar.
The bar.
1 inch
square by half. That's like a
field
size.
Field
size.
Minnow pots are like
half by
half.
Half by half or
1/4 by 1/4.
So going with 1 inch.
Yeah, we'll just go 1 inch.
Yeah,
that would be
1 inch.
That covers your
that covers your
1 inch. What about catfish? That would be that. That would hurt. Is that going to hurt though?
All upriver's exempt. So,
okay, so
yeah.
In other words, if you had your crab pots out and you had a 100 pot fish pot license, you could allow the fish in 10. Legally.
Legally.
But is that by the license? Because I think you mentioned that. If you buy a license, then you're considered in the fishery.
No.
Okay, so you changed it to.
Well, not by a license. If you're talking about the crab, we had thrown around the idea that if you have a license, then you have that limitation. But in fairness, there are those who buy a license, a crab license. They don't even use it.
Okay, so you're going to accept that part.
All we're going to say is if you have crab pots set, then you're limited to the 10% or the cap of 30.
In other words, you can't come back out and fish your 100 pot fish pot license if you got crab pots open.
Right. And chances are you're not going to bring your crab pots up that much anyway, right?
Yeah.
Just to clean them. If you're a crabber.
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to carry through the season. Law enforcement, we talked to them a long time and ran into a few brick walls trying to think about how to do this, but they finally said, you know, let's start with the 10%. They had some cases, which I think are coming before the commission soon. Is one of those cases coming now? This month?
Yes?
Yeah. Okay. But the way they had to make the case, the way they described it to us, was they had to see the harvester take the crabs,
from the fish pond, yeah. put them on the boat, not cull them and then keep them on the boat. So, I mean, the surveillance was going on for hours just to make the case. And that's what brought this to our attention. They actually brought it, they actually were telling us about this last season. And we said, well, do we need to go to the commission? They said, no, wait until 2015 season. I think they had about two cases at least. How many cases did they have for the government?
Well, that's what we have coming before the commission. I don't know who else has been.
Yeah, what they have for a 35 limit, 1 inch.
1 inch?
Yeah, that limit is it.
Okay. All right, well, that was a quickie. That's good. But we, you know, we wanted to make sure.
In other words, you can't have a fish pot. It's got to be inch. It can't be over that.
No, no. Yeah. You can have a fish pot up to, we all know fish pots aren't defined, first of all. So who knows?
You can have up to 10.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Okay.
All right. Good. What else is on anyone's mind? For the time you spent, by the way, I think you, and the amount of people that are here, I think you made some progress. I mean, I feel that way anyway.
Yeah, I agree with that. Yeah. It's good. Well, he talked about a sponge grab. But about this dark coloration thing. Anybody here that's a crabber knows that in June, July, and August, sponge bait. We throw a lot of stuff back. That's dead. Anybody's ever caught it as much as still came up no meaner than the female predator. I mean, she had jumped this high out of the tub after you. Mondays are really bad. They're doing the pot, they're biting on one, they're biting the legs and the claws. You all know this. You know, we throw a lot of stuff back overboard that's only dead in the waste. This dark coloration has always been bad because of that fact.
Well, we're down to June, so it goes through June 30th now. So the commission allowed it to step back. I think in 2007 it stepped back from July 15th, right? So now it's just through the month of June, and you know you have sponges in May, right?
Sometimes. They all depend on geographic location,
salinity, and everything else.
Yes. Mm-hmm. We keep forgetting about water temperature. So starting the season at a certain time, that don't mean nothing. This year approved that. Just so the crab season starts on this day. When your water temperature gets down 36, 37 degrees like it is now, it's going to be late before crab starts on. And the same thing can happen in the fall. You can have a closure in the fall at a certain date. That don't mean nothing. I'm out in December, and I'll put 1st November, too.
Mm-hmm.
That's all based on water temperature. And female sponge crab the same way. That's based on water temperature and geographical location, too.
Mm-hmm. So how much of an issue is the dark sponge crab through June still?
So through June,
yeah.
We have to throw them back through June 30th, right? And then so we keep them in July, keep them in August. What about September, October?
We're pretty much done by then.
Okay.
The black ones and everything?
After.
Yeah. After June 30th.
Yeah. My problem with this is, you know, the studies that were done, the mortality rate, we started talking about this August 21st of 2006. Is when it was
first brought up. Mm-hmm. You know, and there was a bunch of studies done. And basically, it said 80% of the egg mass was lost after handling the egg mass itself. Correct? That doesn't necessarily say the crab's going to die. Then comes back and says, basically, you know, no, I'm sorry, 100% of the egg mass, 80% of the crabs. And then you were talking about doing a follow up study or something or other. Did you ever do that follow up study?
No, we didn't get.
Why not?
We didn't get funded to do it.
Okay. So there was no funding available. Then, to me, throwing back a crab that's going to have an 80% mortality rate and basically 100% egg mass. Waste.
Come on up, Rob, so we can engage.
I mean, it is. It's a waste, unfortunately.
We want to talk about this.
You know, and then you have scientists, and I'm going to read a quote from Ron Lipsius from July of 2006, which basically states that there was consensus among scientists and crabbers that is not having the desired effect for the resource.
What are you talking about?
At a CMAC meeting.
Yeah.
July 6th. I mean, it's right off the minutes.
About what?
About the sponge crabs.
Yeah, that was related to July and August when they're dying.
No, actually it wasn't.
No, I certainly didn't make that statement for June.
At the commission.
At a CMAC meeting.
Yeah, Rob, I know, but Rob and John McConaughey.
They had the argument then.
I think they came to an agreement that they could.
I just wish that basically you could get funding to actually do another study to show the real thing.
Oh, I mean, okay, you know, so
this is a waste of the resource. Personally, you know what? If we didn't keep them, to me at this point, it doesn't matter. But I just hate seeing a crab thrown overboard that is going to die and it's wasteful.
Can I ask a question? If you're able to crab, how much of a mix do you have at certain times between the sponge crabs and not anything else? In other words, is
all sponge crabs. How long of a period of time are you catching sponge crabs?
Strictly sponge crabs.
Like June 1st on, to be safe, probably a little bit before that.
Sponge crabs in April.
Yeah, I mean, that's
only what you're catching, you know.
Probably June,
April.
In Lynn Haven River, we'll catch sponge crabs early on. We'll catch them early.
Oh, well, June, July, and August.
Yeah, in the bay, Weller Bay, June, July, and August.
So you have bushel limits now.
Which are compensating some.
And that's different. I mean, and no one's brought this up, but that's different than when August started. Right?
Yeah.
Now you have a limit. And it doesn't sound like you have an opportunity to say, well, I'm going to throw these sponge crabs back, not because there's a prohibition, but because I want to get clean crabs. You're not going to be able to do that. That's why I asked that question. You're harvesting sponge crabs.
Right.
There's a bushel limit. The only question left now is June more favorable for the female crab and even the sponge than what we all talked about in the past about July?
Yeah. Well, we don't know because it was never a study done for
So that's
really,
I mean, that's the question that would be asked.
I'd rather have it in June than July and August, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I mean, I just hate, again, throwing back a crab that I know is not going to survive. Yeah.
But we don't know that. You just said that. We don't know.
Well, I mean,
if you're
according to the study that was done
already. I think what Rob said earlier, we're going to talk to you about you right now.
That's okay. I'll go ahead.
Was agonistic behavior.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, I'm reading this stuff, and I'm not a very smart person, but if I read 100%. Egg mass loss. That's 100%. You know, that's to me, it's in black and white. I mean, that was August 21st of 2006, and then again in July. I guess if
we're limited, why not just keep what's in the pot? You're done. I wish I don't lie about this. I wish you could go one time in June on a Monday and you see for yourself.
Saturday and Sunday we don't, so they stay in there just writing, you know, they're mean.
Yeah.
Crab is mean, and on Monday it's really bad. If you saw that, you would say, oh, this, you know, we're throwing it back overboard.
That's because you have at least a 2-day soak.
Exactly. If it blows a gale, you know, you miss a day, you can blow a gale on Tuesday, so then Wednesday you're going to have a Sunday, you know, Monday again. So then there's a limit, then sell what's in the pot and go home.
Right. So the key thing is not the month, right? We've already talked right. about it. The key thing is the temperature.
Right.
And for syrup too. I'm sure syrup, it's going to matter how many crabs are in the pot and so on.
Sure.
So a number of variables, right?
Yeah.
The problem was, and it's biased against you guys down south because it's warmer there.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, you're probably going to have some mortality in June, mid to late June at least, where they're not going to have that further up the bay. So
right.
it's a trade-off on, you know, having all these regulations that are going in place.
Yeah, but what you're doing is you're forcing people, like I said, from Tangier to go down there. So the numbers of crabs that are in Cape Charles have increased over the last few years because they haven't been placed together. And they're working on this crab. Now they're working on a crab that has a bushel limit. And I can tell you from my personal experience, I was fed up with it finally after, I don't know how long I've been in the head with this. We took somebody extra with us and we had, what, 48 bushels that we threw over that day? 48 bushels of black crabs that went overboard. We counted them.
And
I'm thinking to myself, what is going on here?
That's another thing to keep in consideration. If you own a bushel limit and you're saving what's in the pot, you ain't coming back to dead ones and trying to catch, you know, those.
No, I totally agree with you with that. That's why
I'm thinking
the year-round sanctuary or whatever may deal with that as well and allow the compensation in what you're talking
which
about.
Which is what you said a half an hour.
Right.
Yeah.
This may talk so about. We should be done with the black sponge crab, period. And we'll just move on.
Yeah. I have
one more thing
I
want
to
say.
Say they like the black sponge.
No,
crab.
Just, to me,
one thing I need to say, because I've been here many years, and I got enough sense to know this.
Yeah.
Listen to me. If he agrees with it, 75% there. So if we can get him to agree what we come up with, and him agree what we come up with, and us, we'll lick this.
The other 25% is one or two of
That's
you.
Exactly right.
Letting the commission know the reasons.
Yep.
Why.
But I've been coming here a long time. When he don't like it. You know, there's no more chance in hell. But I've been there.
I know.
But. If we can all come to the round table decision, we're going to do good. You agree?
Yeah.
Sure.
Bob?
I got to say, this round table stuff seems to be working. Hopefully. We'll see. We'll see how it turns out.
We'll see.
Okay. Well, listen, I think we can wrap it up. And we're going to work with Ron a little bit. We're going to send you a couple of dates and send you the guidelines that the commission uses on cases for violations of the Title 28.2 and associated regulations, is what it is, and that you helped out with to give us your preferences, your scores. We'll take care of that, and then maybe we'll get a little bigger crowd next time. I know that Lynn has already asked me to call her tomorrow and fill her in.
You were going to like email us to show up.
Right.
Yeah, that'd be good.
We email
that'd
say, will you be able to
yeah,
be there?
Be good.
Which date? And then we'll even go further because now I'm not kidding. We'll come back with an email when a date has been chosen and says, will you be here at that date?
Yeah.
I mean, I have to do the same thing, frankly. You know, we'll just get all jammed up.
Yeah. Well, do you think we should set some type of precedent? How many people really need to be here for us to have a proof of meeting? Any idea off the top of your head? How many members we got on the panel?
I would have liked to have seen Johnny here again for the upper sanctuaries and Pete.
Yeah.
I think we're okay with what we've got. I don't mean the crowd tonight. I mean, with our committee that we have. I mean, it seems to be okay.
So is the thing, Rob, we can do a 4-7 meeting, obviously.
One more.
That's
one
it.
More.
Okay.
Yeah.
And really, the only action that we could possibly do about agents.
What's that?
If we wanted to do something, really, the only thing we could do is something about the agents this year. Or...
The only thing you can do about the agents this year is based on what we saw, there were 50 new agents in 2014. If you want to recommend something, the only thing that you should
probably recommend is that there be a lower number than the 168.
Put a cap on it.
And I would tell the commission that not all the members were here, however, six were, and it was their feeling that the 168 was too high based on that 50 new ones, and that perhaps the commission should set the cap at. At what? What would you set the cap at?
Well, the pretty much the average, go back to your slide,
yeah.
we've had the actual number working most years was around 115, 120, or at least the last couple of years.
Last 120 wasn't hit until, I think this was the first year that 120 was hit that actually reported.
Okay.
So before that, I mean, in 2009, it was under 100.
Was it?
Maybe 120.
No, we had 120.
Right.
That's what we had, 120.
Working.
124
last
year. 124.
And that was the highest ever.
124. Go to 125.
Is that a motion? Does everyone agree to 125? It'll be a recommendation.
I do.
Yep. Is that okay? All right, that's what we'll tell the commission, 125. And, I mean, we've had a lot of discussion about this.
Yeah, and then you talked about the...
Yeah, the 9% of the harvest.
Right. So, then if we set it at the 125, then that on the average, that would be about 9%. That would change it.
That would change a little bit, I think.
Like,
yeah, possibly.
But
I think what we're
doing.
It wouldn't be a big
increase.
Yeah, this is an interim measure that you're taking because of the timing.
Right.
This doesn't mean that the committee can't come back with different recommendations.
And now, I mean, like,
for next year.
If somebody, you know, like a hardship or whatever, like somebody got hurt, it couldn't work.
That's still there.
Let's do it.
It'd be good. Five of those, you know,
so far.
Okay. Yeah. But there's five, but you said there were four reasons where anyone can come before the commission or the commissioner and get a hardship?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm talking measures stay that way.
But that would be an issue. If like I got hurt, it couldn't work for
you,
a couple of days or a
you
week.
You or whoever's going to work for you needs to contact.
But I'm talking medical wise.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you still have
okay.
to get a hardship.
Yeah, okay.
But
you don't count
as 125.
What I
not
do
the
is
commission.
Give it
no,
to the commissioner.
That's what I was saying. That's already written in.
I just don't want everybody that's a
full-time. No one get hurt this year, right?
Yeah.
Let me mention one other thing. Based on what some of you had mentioned over the past year about Red Drum in 2012. So I actually went back and looked at Lynn's trawl survey data on Red Drum, and the data matches what everyone was saying. In 2012 and then 2013, even there was still a lot of big fish out there. They dropped way down in 2014. So we are trying to look at that further, but it makes me feel better that we're not likely to have seen that red, well, the red drum weren't out there this past year. Right, so that probably matches what.
2-3 years ago, I've never seen it like that up in the creeks. They'll never know.
The number from the trawl survey were about 10 times.
It was unbelievable.
Yeah.
They were dead.
They were actually also bigger.
Yeah.
On did average.
They migrated, or what do you think? Caught,
I think it's just
after
and also
years
the,
or
the phone yeah, again. And the recreational landings also went up. That year, so
somewhere about that was a big spawning year.
It must have been a coincidence.
Yeah,
biggest one
was 1991. So 1991 was big, but not like 2012. For yearlings.
Yeah.
Well, I appreciate everyone's
it was a baby boom.
And ideas. Thank you very much.
Yeah, exactly.
It was a baby boom.
Yeah.